Welcome to the Free Play Arcade Podcast. We are filming on location today at beautiful Free Play Denton. It is Chris Stelp, community liaison of Free Play, and I am being joined by our special correspondent on Diet GoGo News, Corey Hyden. What's in the Diet GoGo News today?
You know, it's really funny. Diet GoGo, game that was kind of written off to history. People didn't play it. Mm-hmm. Most haven't really heard about it.
Right.
But here, Denton, Texas, it's got its own little community. Tons of fans. They run an event on it. They were like their Wednesday wine down here on Diet GoGo.
Right.
They'll get like, you know, like a solid 10 people that'll just show up just to play Diet GoGo on a Wednesday night. Which just seems like mysterious to me. Like, how does that even happen? But that's the power of Free Play Denton. Yes. That's our downtown Miami, Denton, Texas arcade.
Haven't lived until you've seen a Diet GoGo cosplayer.
Right.
And I have.
And of course, that game, the best part about that game is the dynamics of you moving slower as you get fatter. Just like a really, really cool twist on that single screen platformer horizontal game. But we're here today to talk indie games.
Indie games, yes.
Not fake arcade one-up conversations that we didn't actually take part of that went kind of viral on Twitter. That was dumb. Don't be so insecure, guys. But we're here to talk about indie games. I think we're going to start off with,
I want to say, like, slash, well-made arcade games from America.
Yeah, that's true. So that kind of gets us to one of the big problems I had since opening Free Play. So we opened Free Play, right? And it's a hardcore retro arcade. And as we kind of get more comfortable, we wanted to start dabbling, introducing good arcade games, no matter when they came out.
Right.
So, like, when we first opened, we were, like, 20 years or older. Right,
that was the rule of thumb.
Yeah. Those were the games we wanted to feature because there were still so many of those that hadn't been brought back to DFW. Mm-hmm. And then, especially as we started expanding and being able to put hundreds and hundreds of games on the floor, it started to become kind of like, we want to feature good games in any shape, whenever they came out. And that actually opened some things up, but it also made our life really, really hard. As here in America, it hasn't exactly been a big boom of quality arcade games for the last 20 years.
In fact, it's been quite the opposite.
It's been a desert. It's been a true desert of quality.
Could you imagine? I know you like to see the reviews. Could you imagine the reviews if you put, you know, just the most like jaded, terrible?
I can't imagine because I can go read them right now in some of the modern arcades that charge $1, $2, $3, $4 per play for some of these pretty awful games. So, and they're also pretty expensive. So that's definitely a challenge for a Free Play style arcade where you have a single admission price, and you want your patrons to be able to explore, play as much as they'd like. That puts a lot more pressure on your game costs compared to some of the modern arcades where they can really figure out exactly the value of an arcade, right? Because they can look to see how much money that arcade has earned versus what it costs. That's not exactly what we can do.
Yeah, we only care about the quality of the entertainment experience for people coming in through the door.
So one of the things we started to do that was kind of creeping into existence the same time we were, because we opened back in 2015, and right around then, there was this kind of resurgent interest in arcades, and some indie American-made arcades started to kind of pop up. So yeah, I think that brings us to our very first, and you weren't even an employee yet.
I was not an employee, but I was definitely there day one when you brought Sky Cursor to the forefront.
So Sky Cursor was definitely the very first game that really, really made us think, wow, we're going to be able to put new games out. So Sky Cursor came out. It's a horizontal shmup, really, really like.
Yeah, developed by Griffin Aerotech out in Indiana. That's a team of four people.
Well, and they had made a pretty awesome kind of like brand new arcade system that was JAMA compatible, but that, you know, ran like modern stuff using modern hardware, which is a challenge.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to be able to release a game that you could plug right into many old arcade cabinets.
Legit old school arcade game that was brand new.
Right. And that was really exciting. And of course, we actually watched all the videos, did some playtesting, and we were like, this is actually a really awesome game. They had really taken their theme, which is like, it's like a kind of a brutal shmup, like, but like really, really it's goofy and fun at the same time.
Side-scrolling shoot 'em up along the lines of maybe Gradius, but it's inspired by mini games. It has some special combination moves that are kind of fighting game-esque. Right. They even have one that they call the EX move, where you just sort of tap the buttons ABA real quick. You have aliens taking over the world via cataclysm and meteors and blah blah nonsense.
You've got your sidekick dog,
right? The dog is the sidekick, and the player too, right, in a later release. But yeah, the art when I first played it was just over the top. There's blood everywhere. For what reason, I'm not sure.
Just because it's hilarious and fun.
But like pixelated cities, and the boss characters are so incredibly well designed on their art. Like there's a giant skull.
That was the thing that really got us, was the art direction on this game was just amazing. And what I really, really loved where they were basically releasing it in two formats, both of which I loved, as a automatic dedicated conversion kit for a Dynamo cut corner cabinet, mm-hmm. And as a kit for like a candy cap, basically.
Yes.
Which both are great ways to play shmups. Mm-hmm. And so, but that full art package just really, really got me like so excited. So we went and yeah, we ordered the full kit. We converted what actually used to be that Virtua Fighter 4 that was on the floor.
Is that where that thing
was? That's what that cabinet was. Because it was a very nice Dynamo cabinet. Virtua Fighter 4, though I actually love the game.
I always meant to get to play it, right? it was on my list to get to, but there were all these other games. I don't think I ever would have gotten to it, considering how many games are here. But I have played a ton of Sky Cursor.
Well, and so, yeah, we had that nice cabinet, and we decided, let's go ahead and that looks like it'll turn into a great Sky Cursor cabinet. We saved the Virtua Fighter 4 board, obviously. It's still in the collection. And we just we did a full kit on it, released it for some event, actually. We had some event coming. Maybe our first anniversary?
It was the Halloween party, I'm pretty sure.
Was it? Well, it was definitely one of those events that we'd been open for approximately, you know, it was our second year. It was 2016 now, but we were only open a little bit during 2015. So
2016, then it might have been New Year's. I don't know. It was one of those early parties.
I think it was 2016. I could look it up, but it doesn't really matter. We released it for an event, and it was kind of cool because I think it really helped the people who are, you know, our regulars see kind of a possible like pivot in terms of the games and the direction we were going, which would be, you know, yeah, if it's a quality game, regardless of when it's released, we're going to start working on sourcing it.
Well, I forever love what they did with Sky Cursor in that they made an old arcade game. It wasn't like we're talking about indie modern arcade games that are many times retro inspired. But no, this Sky Cursor is made for a CRT.
Right.
Which has not been made, like, manufactured since before the release of Sky Cursor.
Right.
Like, it's been illegal. How bold is that?
It's been illegal to make them in the States. And yeah, it's designed to be played on a CRT. It's really, it really, really checked all of the boxes, especially as like a transitory game, like as a transition from us being like, you know, wait, we're a hardcore retro arcade to, you know what, we're going to go find great games wherever they exist. It was an easy choice for us. And yeah, we released it, and it's been very popular. It's great. It's actually here at Free Play Denton.
Yeah, you'll hear it many times.
If you listen carefully, you can hear the Sky Cursor kind of call-outs. And yeah, it's a great game. And it was our first opportunity to work with those guys, and they've been sponsoring different community groups.
Our monthly the monthly game challenge right? for 4 years now. Something like that.
And that's we really appreciate that. It's been great. And it's really been a great relationship to have with them. And it really did play a major part in us evolving as an arcade. And we've certainly evolved. So
Special shout out to the guys who did the music to that game too. The music's awesome. The art's awesome. The design is awesome. Everybody who put a hand in Sky Cursor really knocked it out of the park.
Right. Absolutely.
And it's so authentically an old arcade game that I cannot tell you how many people walk by the old game that they never played for a old game that they remember playing.
Right.
They just assume it's another one of your hidden classics that they want to get to later. You know, it's Daigogo or Enigma 2 or whatever.
Yeah, and you know, that's what's really great is there are definitely people in the world that came to Free Play that played Sky Cursor, that went home and they were just like, you know, I must have missed that back in the 80s. I guess I didn't get to enjoy that, but I'm really glad I got, you know, like that. There's those people that just assume it must have been just a rare game that we found that they had never seen or played before.
I can't remember if it actually takes place in it. Yeah, it takes place in the year 1996. the far distant future of 1996. Another motif that I like, Smash TV, I recently did a run through of, had a 1999 was the setting of it. Of course, it was released in 90. Sky Cursor released a full 20 years later.
So, and that really started, it started something for us where we were, not only did we want to make sure that we were getting involved in like the indie arcade scene, because obviously like we have a great interest in having quality arcade games coming out, no matter how they come out. And that, to me, that was kind of like extremely important once we realized that it existed, that we were getting involved with it and supporting it, primarily because, like, right, we want quality games to keep coming out. And the only way it's going to keep happening is if we're some of the consumers buying that. Well, we're their target market. We need to make sure that we're doing our job.
Sky Cursor is a deep game. I've played it many, many times over the course of years, and I'm still learning new things about the games. And that's not including, like, they release an extra mission later on. Like, that's awesome and has depth as well. But even within the initial missions that I was playing, those first days, you know, how you defeat the enemies coming into the screen, how you use your different weapons, like, you can play the same game again and again and get a major different experience each time. And that's sort of the hallmark of a classic arcade game.
And
a good one.
The nice thing about Sky Cursor, of course, was they absolutely were making sure that they were building it like in a classic arcade game. So it has that depth versus, for example, and I promise I'm not going to spend too much time during this podcast railing on Raw Thrills, but my biggest issue with their games right now is that basically it almost always ends exactly where they want it to end.
Right.
Regardless of your skill or anything.
Right.
Because it's kind of just, it's designed to get you to put another credit in it.
Yeah,
which there are plenty of classic arcade games that did that. But you could get better at those classic arcade games. Whereas with Raw Thrills, many times, no matter how good you get, it basically has like this difficulty curve that will go straight up about where they want you to die.
Well, they have a difficulty curve that just doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't go straight up. It just like cuts off. Like you just die here.
Right.
The end.
And so it's that and. As gamers, that's like really kind of difficult for me to wrap my head around. Like,
I'm better with it being something like Big Buck Hunter, where it's a track,
right?
Like you just play until this part,
and it's how good you do on the track,
right?
And that's your score, and that works. And that's actually Big Buck Hunter is one of the non-indie, more modern games that we feature. That Silver Strike, Golden Tee, those kind of skill. Type
and Golden Tee,
arcade
games. Oh, both of those, right. But bowling, like they take place on a track. Like the game ends at a certain time, but we understand the parameters going in,
right? And to me, those are still arcade games, and I think they're generally pretty good. Especially certain versions of them are really good. And I know I've made fun of Big Buck for kind of going off the rails and having like zombie deers attack. Like that to me, I'm not actually like that sounds crazy and weird, but. Generally, the Big Buck Hunter Pro release we found is really, really good for our environment. The Golden Tee 4 Complete, I've played a lot of Golden Tee. I'm really into it. That is the version for me.
I'm very pro Pat Summerall doing the voiceover. Right.
And then we've got the Silver Strike, which there's that period of Silver Strike from, I think, 2007 to like 2012. I think all of those are pretty good versions because it's the... There's not a different course in bowling, right? It's always the same lane.
Right.
But those games, I think, are totally fine. But I do think there's been a lot of bad American releases. And I don't see any change coming.
I think the indie games represent as much of the change as we're going to get.
So, Sky Cursor, that was kind of a true classic style game with, you know, two players max, all of that. And
one player initially.
Right. And it was one player, and then they released the two player patch, which was cool. But what I think is really interesting is the next set of indie games that we kind of got into, we're trying to harness modern technology to get more people involved.
Yes.
To try to make these kind of public party type games, right?
Right. But at least. three of the four that we're talking about will they'll all have classic arcade roots.
Right.
Right. So they'll use modern technology and modern game design elements, but clearly base them around old school games.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, I think all of them have a ton of retro to them. Mm-hmm. That we're going to be talking about. So let's just around. I don't even know. We had two pretty requested games for a while that we had held off on getting. Both that involved multiple people, and both that actually had supply chain issues. So that
new developers, right. You know, they don't have access to the vast supply or distribution chains that the big companies out of Chicago would have.
Well, and a big problem they also have is when they team up with a cabinet builder, mm-hmm. things can go. There's the amount of profit they're having to give up, and often the terms of the deal can be really, really tough on them. So it's a lot of them will also rush to try to sign up with a cabinet builder and then have to try to back away from that deal pretty fast. So we'll go ahead and get into what was one of the most requested games that we hadn't carried, and we weren't sure if we ever would get it. But I knew when we eventually did, we'd go head first. That was, of course, Killer Queen. Killer Queen, the 10-player multiplayer arcade game in many ways is like the greatest. And now it's a great arcade game, but it's the greatest team building experience, I think, that exists in the arcade.
Naturally.
Right, yeah. Right. Because it's 5-on-5 and you all have to work together to win.
Yeah.
I mean, there's obviously, and I know we've talked about Killer Queen on this podcast before, so I won't go too hard on the game mechanics. And there's actually videos on this channel where you can kind of see the different things. But, you know, Killer Queen is four players and a queen. And four players and kind of like a chess
on
queen.
On each side.
On each side. Yeah. Battling for supremacy. And there's different ways to win and everything.
Yeah, but the queen very clearly represents like a joust type character.
Right.
And then the bears are very clearly Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
Like the original Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a very obviously inspired by Mario Brothers and Joust, two games that are at our locations at any given time, like multiple locations at any given time.
Well, and part of its genius is that it's super easy to pick up. It's a stick and a button.
Yeah.
You move the stick, your character goes where you move it. The button is just jump or flap, basically.
Yeah, the single screen platformer, which Joust, I believe, pioneered, well, multiplayer single screen platformer, and then Mario Brothers was inspired by, like that specific genre has gone on to inspire, well, not only Diet Go-Go, our big news story of the day, but Smash Brothers.
There's
any number of game types that have evolved from that, and the simplicity of just left and right and button, it's right there in Killer Queen. It's perfect.
Well, and of course, I was a child when they came up with like Smash Brothers, but yeah, you can see like how obvious, but like that format should have been to everyone because of Mario Brothers, because of Joust.
Right.
Single screen 1v1, which neither of those games are necessarily about that 1v1 challenge.
Right.
But having that single screen...
Even like Joust and Mario Brothers, you know, the CPUs represent more stuff happening in the screen, right?
So
it's there. It's right there for you.
But yeah, so then you have Killer Queen, 50 plus 55 inch or something, big flat screen showing you this massive map that has 10 people all running around on it. At the same time, all playing against each other, or playing either with or against each other. It's a really great game. And when we first started to look into launching it, we had to have like a really interesting conversation, both about money, and because these are $15,000 each.
Is that the most expensive indie game out there?
I hope so.
I don't know.
I think so.
You read the text, not me.
The truth is, that's at a price level that's not too dissimilar than like the Star Wars Battle Pods, mm-hmm. In terms of a single
arcade
game.
It's got a footprint
game.
Like that as well.
Right,
it's
right.
Very large.
It's a big game. But the genius, especially at a free play arcade, is like, because you can imagine how hard it is to have a 10-player game and try to deal with either tokens or credit swipes or anything like that, how you decide what equals what, right? Mm-hmm. Because generally at these locations that are per-game chargers, you'll have to buy a side-in. But if you're buying a side-in for five people, like figuring out how you split that cost and everything, that can be like a whole thing. It's at least a discussion you have to have.
Right.
Here at Free Play, it's just everyone hits start.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I don't know how paying for Killer Queen works.
Well, and that's literally a non-free play how it normally works is you buy a site in, and the agreement, the tentative agreement would normally be, you're going to play five games. Each person's going to buy the side one time.
Okay.
Would be kind of how they try to work it out. And then most of the bars or whatever around the country, if it's like an event, they'll switch to free play mode and either like charge a cover or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that was never something that we, fortunately have to deal with, because it's set to free play. You can hop in whenever you want.
No, I can practice individually, and I'm glad I live here in the Metroplex where I can play this game at free play.
But yeah, when you're thinking about bringing a game like that, and you know it's kind of a community game, we had to think, like, you know, we're at Free Play Denton right now, and though there's been a price increase coming in June, Free Play Denton right now is $6 after tax to get in and play unlimited gameplay. Putting a $15,000 game into that kind of...
If you're
going to
play five games with your buddies,
right,
that cost a dollar each, like you've already paid for it.
Well, yeah, and I think most of the places are now at like $2 a game, $4 a game kind of pricing. So you have to really do a lot of math and make some tough choices. And I was never sure I was going to get to Denton, but here it is. We've got Killer Queen here at Denton, Killer Queen at every Free Play location. And, you know, a really resurgent community at each location that we're still kind of working on, because one of the interesting things to me about Killer Queen, unlike a lot of our games, is we have probably more people playing Killer Queen at Free Play, definitely probably than any other arcade chain that exists, because we've got tens of thousands of players on Killer Queen every single week. We haven't done the best job being able to convert them, because it is so approachable. I think people don't naturally just think, I want to become like a hardcore player at it. It's like you play
also,
it and you have fun.
It's also team building and community building, right, like in its design.
Right.
Like you have to play with, well, you don't have to play with 10 players. It is not nearly as compelling with 1v1.
Right.
I wouldn't recommend it. I absolutely would recommend it about 2 or 3v3.
Yeah, the 3v3, you start to basically get the experience.
You know, culturally, we're not necessarily like, this isn't a day and age where you go out and meet your neighbors. I don't even know my neighbors.
Right.
So that's, in fact, like, that's literally the splash screen of Killer Queen that says, meet thy neighbors.
Right.
So much so that little kids that play the game sometimes mistake that for the name of the game. It's incredibly precious.
Well, and that's,
but that's something we struggle with sometimes as a society. And like, if you bring your whole squad in and play Killer Queen together, which happens a lot, we're going out to free play, we're getting drinks. You don't necessarily connect with the players beside you, which is kind of what that game is intended to do.
Well, so. And the other great thing is it's such a approachable game, and you can start playing basically at any time, that we also have lots of people who drop in and drop out really fast during a busy Friday and Saturday.
Right.
So yeah, they won't necessarily even meet, but they'll have played a game with someone. And I think there's actually a beauty to that. They'll have come played a game with someone, never really met them, and moved on. And I think Killer Queen is really, really good at that. But that does present a challenge, right?
I recommend that experience to anybody who does go to free play. If you see an open joystick on Killer Queen, I know you haven't played the game. Jump in there, hit the button.
Well, yeah,
play it.
It's really...
you'll make it more fun for everybody involved, including yourself.
That's always the most interesting thing that I see on like a Friday and Saturday, when you'll have like 3 or 4 people playing Killer Queen, and you'll see like a line of 10 people behind them, or 6 people, or 2 people, and you're just like, just go play. Just play it.
Right.
Get
right.
in there.
Oh, they'll watch. They'll be fascinated. No, I'm just watching. I don't know how to play the game. Yeah, come on in. It is more fun to play that game with 4 people, 2 on each side that are random, new, they've never touched the game before,
right,
and 3 like grandmasters on each side, than to just have the 3 people blasting away at each other.
Well, and
more players, more fun.
It's been a super, super successful game for us, which is really cool that we're talking about an indie game in this kind of way. It's been super, super successful in us. When we sell these big Fortune 500 private events, those, like, you know, big companies that are coming to round the location, it's been really, really cool, because if you put 10 of their employees on there for one round, they'll start to like really start working together, really want to be a good team. And it sounds really cheesy, and I always thought team building was really like a dumb concept back when I was like a lawyer who worked with like 3 or 4 other people.
Uh-huh.
Or when I was a lawyer who worked in an office where I had like my team, but we didn't really interact with the other team. Like, it was always a much smaller world. But now that we have like 70 employees, I like think all the time that team building is actually important. Like just interacting with your coworkers in a way that
the bonding, the high fiving that just naturally occurs.
So that was that's been super, super awesome. And Killer Queen's at all the locations and is gonna keep being at all the locations as we open. Even though that does mean we have like $60,000 of Killer Queens floating around, which is cool. Cause I mean, like, I think that it's a good, way to support that indie scene. And obviously a ton went into building the cabs and, it does seem that we are able to get them. I remember when I was like, okay, I need 4 Killer Queens. That was not exactly like, snap the fingers and then materialize. It took, months of waiting, months of getting everything together, and was not automatic, but we have them, and I do think that they are still building them every day. So I
have to say that's as the layman, just arcade player, that's been the most shocking thing about seeing behind the scenes arcade action is when you order a new product and it might be over a year where you're waiting for it to just be built.
Right.
In my child brain, I remember hearing about how many thousands of dollars Mortal Kombat 2 was over there and thinking, there's no way I could amass that much money to actually buy it, but I would and then play it the next day if I had all that money. Well, they got to build it first.
Right.
Especially these indie games that have limited number builds.
Well, yeah, so I think Killer Queen has gone through the full kind of indie build range. So Skycursor is kind of cool. They do sell their own cabinets, but Skycursor is really big on making kits because they're building them for cabinets that generally already exist.
Right.
Whereas Killer Queen is a 10-player game. Those don't already exist. So they have to come up with a way to actually build them.
It's a unique cab, unique looking cab, unique shaped, sized, everything.
So I think Killer Queen's gone from the full where they're building it themselves, which is where they all kind of have to start, to then trying to find like a bigger manufacturer.
Yeah, the original
and a bigger
ones had NES controllers.
Yeah.
Like literally.
Well, I mean, that's how you got to test them while you figure things out. So, and then they slowly built, they've gone through a few different builders at this point.
I don't even know who the newest one is.
I can guess, but I don't want to be wrong on a podcast and then give credits to wrong people. Mm-hmm. But it's a more complicated, and that's something that the indie is super super hard for an indie developer, right? Not only do they have to make a compelling game that's worth whatever you're charging for it, you have to figure out how to get that game out there. How to sell it, how to support it, how to market it, all is like no matter what, has to be a small team of only a couple people.
Yeah.
So that's super, super tough. But hopefully.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, Griffin Aerotech was looking to try and make their system compatible and stable enough that other people could potentially develop on it. They could reinvigorate, you know, arcades with good arcade games. Because they clearly. That's Griffin Aerotech's passion is like bringing back arcades in a real way. You know, we've seen Bumble Bear move on to console, and it's mainly what Josh and Nikita. I've met Nikita. He's clearly an old school arcade guy, but like I don't know if they care as much about where it lives as those guys at Griffin Aerotech do, where they are super hardcore arcade.
Well, yeah, I think Bubble Bear, their main, especially with Killer Queen and where they started, was to make sure that they got kind of a arcade social experience.
Yes.
Because the Killer Queen had started out as like a game you actually play on a field, mm-hmm. Kind of thing. And then they were like, this game is really cool. The rule set's pretty good. I wonder if we could make a video game out of it. And their concept was, of course, the arcade, trying to bring back that social experience. And I do know that they had something to do with Killer Queen Black. I have no idea how that's doing or anything.
It's not the same game. It's 4v4. It's got other convoluted stuff like lag and things that I have no interest in as someone who plays arcade games every day. Like I've never played. I don't want to play. That doesn't sound fun.
Well, I do know that's...
Not to me. That's not my style.
I'm a hardcore arcade guy as it is. So I really, really like being next to the person I'm playing with. I really, really like that experience. And I love having two teams in the same room next to each other, basically.
Yeah.
Where at the end of it, you get to go look each other in the eye, shake each other's hands, share a beer, share an actual moment together, which is weird because, you know, like growing up, all I did was play online shooters. But my favorite part of it was when we would go to LAN parties, go to the big LAN events, go to the big tournaments. The social part of it was a ton of fun for me. Mm-hmm. And just being able to interact with all these people that I know only from online, and you get to really test your skill right next to each other, shake each other's hands, say good game at the end of it.
High fives.
Yeah. And that was like, all, you know, all of my favorite experiences are on the stage next to people, win or lose. I love all of that. So that's why I was so hardcore, Killer Queen. And I obviously, Bumblebear has an arcade hit on their hands, and I it's popping up in lots of locations. And a lot of people have asked if we're going to see it in the
still supporting it too.
And there's new maps that are working out and everything. A lot of people have asked whether or not we're going to see it start popping up in like those bigger, more family entertainment center style arcades versus the barcade type thing. Whereas I know people consider Free Play kind of like a everything-cade. So I mean we have a award-winning bar at all locations and great food and everything, but people have wondered if you're going to see it cross over to like main events, Dave and Buster's. I know Pinballs had one in Austin, and they're pretty family entertainment center.
I believe they do, yes.
Oriented, and I guess that didn't go great. I don't know. So I feel like it's probably a lot harder for the arcades that have to charge per game.
Yeah, you can't have Killer Queen in this entire city without it being on Free Play. I mean, you can have it, it just won't.
Well,
be
yeah,
played.
Certainly in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, there's no reason to have it in any other format but Free Play.
When you can come to Free Play and play if it's $5 for five games, then and it's $5 or $6 to walk in here and play literally till 2 a.m. There's no real. No well, real contest.
And the other thing, I'm not really
and
complaining.
And you would never meet thy neighbors I don't know. How would I know? I've never played at Coin-Op. But like, it's so much harder to get.
Well, I will say there are places that mm-hmm. have built these huge, loving Killer Queen communities that do charge per game.
Well, almost all of them except for us.
Yeah.
Because we're unique here.
But that said, all of their league nights are still they end up setting it to Free Play one way or another and stuff like that. So and that's generally when all the play gets to happen. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but speaking of multiplayer kind of social games, we brought Killer Queen in around the exact same time as we brought in Cosmatrons. Mm-hmm. And Cosmatrons, we had actually ordered Cosmatrons far before we had ordered Killer Queen. But we'd ordered a certain version. So Cosmatrons is this really, really cool space shooter straight out of early 80s vector games.
Yes.
I mean, you can see asteroids, space, dual, lunar.
Until you see Gravitar, and then you can see nothing else.
Then you see Gravitar, right? Because it basically takes... I think that this is actually what Gravitar was missing.
I 100% agree.
In many ways, because you've got the fuel, you've got the gravity, you've got the navigation of these weird foreign vector planets, which was interesting, but Gravitar... But now you have someone to shoot. You have like an actual ship to shoot, not just bases or whatever in Gravitar. Now you're actually going and to war mm-hmm. With each other. And so, yeah, you're flying around these vector levels. And the cool thing about Cosmatrons is it's a four-player game. Four players, same screen. It can be like a free-for-all battle, 2v2, team. They have all sorts of modes. But the beauty is, yeah, it's a hardcore arcade enthusiast style game that's then made social through multiple players. Mm-hmm. And it's one of my favorite things. And of course, and maybe we'll be able to flash it on YouTube or something. They have two cabinets.
Yes.
And we, one of the things that sold me the hardest on Cosmatrons was their Deluxatron fiberglass cabinet because it looks just like every vision. Like if you look at all the arcades, like, Computer Space and all of that in the early 70s, it kind of looks like what the future was going to look like of arcades. And they went ahead and they made one out of fiberglass, I think basically out of like a small warehouse or their garage. I don't actually know the details, but they made one out of fiberglass. It's this molded, beautiful white cabinets. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have to have one of those no matter what. So I went ahead and I pulled the trigger on two at the same time. Deluxe-atron Cosmatrons. And I think that's one of the best decisions I've ever made in my entire life.
I mean, you know, the kids seem nice. I've met them. But Deluxe-atron version of Cosmatrons is very good. And, like, it might be the best-looking cabinet in all the free plays.
Right,
and,
right.
And it always... It's always the one that people point to, even if they don't notice it initially. When they walk around the corner at Free Play Richardson, they point at it and they're like, whoa, what is that?
Well, and there is a less expensive wood version that exists that has the game in it. Mm-hmm. But there's something like, you know, the experience of playing on that fiberglass molded with the stamped, I don't even know what it is, stainless steel top that they put on the control panel. It's incredible. It's amazing. We love it so, so very much. And we've got Cosmatrons at Free Play Richardson and Free Play Arlington.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awesome.
And we have a really tight-knit community that plays that game as well. They'll travel to either location as long as they know that there's someone there to play, they will come and play with you. And it's so fun. I can't say I've had so much fun playing a game without even shooting. Like, that's... It pains me to even press the shoot button because it's so fun to just fly around in that game.
Right. They nailed the physics really, really well.
Oh, it's so
fun.
They
captured that original early 80s vector feel. And what I actually think is interesting is it uses the same general layout with a turn and a turn and a thrust and a shoot.
Yes.
Buttons, no joysticks or anything.
Not a joystick.
And a lot of people have said that's not super approachable, which is probably true. But what I really think is amazing is... Every single person I've ever been like, come play Cosmatrons with me, and they play one round. Every time I see them at the arcade again, they say, hey, you want to come play Cosmatrons? Because like it, once you have played a round and you kind of understand the game physics and the mechanics.
Once you get the physics, yeah, that's it. That's the barrier.
It's so much fun just to exist in that game. Like that's and it really I really do find it that even when I'm like warring with three other people and we're all in like a free-for-all, I'm spending so much more time just enjoying the journey, like flying around and then of course, you know, blasting them is fun too.
But. Yeah, and you have gravity, you're drifting through space, and because it's one of the best representations of just drifting, I've noticed that racing game players or just flat out racers in the Metroplex have taken to that game because they love the drifting mechanic. And it might even be more fun than, you know, shooting your friends. For me, it is more fun than shooting my friends. I shoot my friends all the time in all these different games, right? In Cosmatrons, they can shoot at me and I will just fly around corners and fly through the screen and infinitely fall through the screen to the point that the developer special messages me to say I'm taking it out of the game. It's great.
Well, yeah, and of course it's developed by Arcadeaholics, and they, I mean, their basic passion, from what I understand in making the game, was they loved these old school arcade games and they wanted to see more of them made. So they went out and they did it. They built it. They made it. And it's super, super awesome. Super, super cool game. And it brings me so much joy every time I see it on the floor. Like it's just so incredible. Cause it fits with next to any game we put out there. Like Killer Queen is this huge, massive thing that looks totally different than anything else out there. Mm-hmm. But Cosmatrons just looks like the evolution of the arcade.
It does. It does. You're right. It looks like
as long as it's
computer
the
space version 7.
Yeah, it's so cool. And that one is just been a really, really fun one to have out. And the only advice I would give for anyone listening to this that's at all interested is to just go play it for a while, get used to it, learn about it.
Fly around.
Pick
the single player, which is compelling because you can fly around.
We do have the occasional event on it, and of course, one of the things we should go ahead and mention, we have this in part of the spring series. We have the Indie Age Weekend.
Yes,
that is coming up where we're giving away prizes on Killer Queen, Cosmatrons, and the game I believe we're going to talk about next.
Go ahead and go to freeplayspringseries.com if you're interested. It's May 1st through 2nd, it's Free Play's Indie Age Weekend, and it'll be at Free Play Arlington because we have all that extra space.
Yeah, we'll have two Killer Queens there. We'll have a Cosmatrons there. We'll have the next game, which is the most recent. We did a YouTube video on it. Death Ball will be there. And, man, Death Ball's a lot of fun. Death Ball's really, really cool. I remember, like, Death Ball was interesting because it was another one that I ordered. And that was kind of just like this big, long 6-8 week wait. And then it just materialized. And we kind of captured it on the camera, the live build, putting it together and everything. And Deathball is like, I've heard it described a lot of ways, but the truth is, it's a really fun 1v1 game. It's basically that's it. It's soccer slash platforming Mario.
Yeah. It's you know, it does have its origins in Mario Brothers if you want to look at it that way, but it's so innately tied because it came from the Killer Queen community to Killer Queen. It is very much an aspect, one singular aspect of the Killer Queen experience, which around here we call it soccer berries.
Where you're playing with the berries at the bottom of
the screen. The berries are flying around the screen. You jump into it. You're holding another berry, and you kind of bounce it with your head, and you're trying to score a goal with it that way and get 2-1.
Right, and how crazy is that? There's a cool derivative game
from one indie to another one.
So this
is literally developed at a Killer Queen tournament. Let's see. It was Tony Halber. I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name, Tony. You have my email. You can yell at me later. In a 2017 tournament in San Francisco. He just developed it on a computer right there. And the owner of the arcade that they were developing it at, or he was playing it at, said, you put this in the cabinet, I'm going to buy it.
Right.
That was it.
Yeah. Well, and it was, it's a cool game. It's awesome. It's at the floor of Felipe Richardson. I know we have meets for it. And the really nice thing is it just fits in there, kind of. Like, it you can tell it's a modern game. It's got some lighting. It's got a view screen, and it is on an LCD screen. Mm-hmm. But it just feels like part of the line at this point, which is really, really cool. And we will be doing a Death Ball tournament as part of that Indie Age weekend, which is something that we're going to start focusing more and more on as we can. And I guess we can't give a lot of details. And one of the things I wanted to talk about when we were talking about Sky Cursor, which keeps yelling at me, the Griffin Aerotech guys, they did announce not too long ago. It's actually been about 8 months, 9 months. What is almost certainly going to be the biggest indie arcade release in a long, long time, which is it's a sequel to Devolver Digital's Enter the Gungeon. And Devolver Digital is the publisher, but they're kind of the name you know most, called House of the Gundead. Mm-hmm. That's going to be in an arcade cab. It's an arcade release. And that is pretty much all the info I can give y'all. But just look for some potential announcements in the future, maybe. I don't want to say anything that's wrong, and I don't want to spoil anything. So
we'll spend a lot more time talking about that.
Yeah, that'll get its own coverage, maybe. But what we can see
we're huge fans of Griffin Aerotech here. I mean, we're early supporters of Sky Cursor and all of their endeavors there. So to know that they're making a new game and it's on the Enter the Gungeon,
That's what's kind of cool. Yeah, Enter the Gungeon is one of the most successful indie games in the last 5 or 6 years. And it's getting an arcade sequel. That definitely gets something stirring inside of me. So we'll talk more about that later.
We'll talk much more about that later.
But I think it's a good sign of where things are going. Things are headed. We've got indie games being made. We've got arcades kind of being paid attention to. And what I will say is that Free Play has long wanted to try to get into helping making our own, right? Which we're still a long time away. But I can tell you that by the end of 2020, we'll have some interesting stuff hitting the arcade that is not in any other arcade. Mm-hmm. As we try to, help push arcades along, right?
We want good arcades.
Well, and
they could be modern games, good ones. We want to help in any way we can with the industry.
Well, and we're trying to, right, not only bring back the arcade, we're trying to keep it around forever. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is we constantly work on this, right? So, like, in 2015, we showed we can bring back retro arcades. People play them. People love them, these games. And now we're trying to just see where our evolution takes us. So we've talked kind of about these indie games, but one of the other things that I wanted to briefly mention is how we've been mining, harvesting Lots of great games.
I tried to kill off Mutoid Man.
Japan. Recent Japanese releases. Like Bishi Bashi Channel, now at Richardson. Mm-hmm. We've got Cross Beats popping up, Jew Beats. Basically, your smaller rhythm games that have been really, really good in the past few years. We've been putting those out too. The great thing is here in America, we've got this hopefully thriving indie arcade scene that we're supporting.
Yeah.
Japan has had a good arcade scene for a long time, although we have seen even that slowing down. So that has definitely made me a little bit nervous over the past 5 years.
Well, they've also struggled with, I don't know, everything that's gone on with arcade games throughout the past several decades. You know, people playing on PlayStations and whatnot.
Well, it's one of my least favorite things that has happened, and I know a lot of people talk about this all the time, but it has also, the whole game industry has changed so dramatically, because now instead of making an arcade game where you can get a one-time sell for 10 grand or whatever, now every single person is holding a screen, and you can make games where they'll give you $2 a day or $3 a day, microtransactions over and over and over.
Yeah.
And some people actually do that. So that's one of my biggest concerns for some of the Japanese developers, because you know, a lot of these touchscreen rhythm games have also been released on mobile. That's all fine. I'm not at all against that, but I do worry that they're just going to decide they don't care about making arcade games ever again, because they can make it $1 a song or $2 a song for every single person times 1 million or 2 million or 5 million or 70 million or 100 million.
Yeah, I hope it never fully goes that way. And when I went out to Japan myself, they were struggling with where to invest their money. The major arcade manufacturers were following, I guess, the Dave and Buster's trend and making as big of an arcade machine as possible. So we're talking like the entire, you know, quarter of your building is dedicated to one game, the train simulator, that costs who knows how much to rent.
Basically. Well, that's the thing. Yeah, Japan is struggling with that, where they've, you know, their population stabilized and is actually shrinking slightly. So real estate prices aren't necessarily going to keep skyrocketing. So they might, where they once were growing so fast that they couldn't afford the real estate for arcades, so everything was small, tight. Now
everything is how to make money.
Now it's changing so that they have floor space, and they're figuring out the best way to monetize that floor space. And unfortunately, a lot of times it is those big games that they can charge a fortune for versus a bunch of small ones. There's definitely a lot of things facing the industry. And I guess if you're an arcade operator out there or a bar operator, one of the things I can say is indie arcade games are a good investment.
Support your indie developers.
Buy them, support them, and see how it goes. And I guess I want to make sure I also say, we don't buy indie just because it's indie. We buy it because those are the good games available right now. We're pro supporting it anyways, because having more people making more arcade games is great for us long term as well, both as arcade fans and arcade operators. We're kind of like at the point where we want as many people making these games because we need choices.
It works on every level, and each one of them is worth your time. And if you're not local, and you can go and find these out there, the games are Sky Cursor, Cosmatrons, Killer Queen, and Death Ball. You can find them on the internet and find your local arcade that has it. Maybe, if not, maybe you want to look into getting one yourself, or just come move out here and enjoy a free play arcade as you should.
And I guess I need to really quick, while we're talking indie arcade games, there's a I don't know where in Asia they're based, arcade system coming out, the EXA Arcadia, or the Arcadia EXA, that is early. They have a product out. It exists, but they have like, and it's Neo Geo-ish or arcade system, maybe CPS2-ish. Mm-hmm. It's basically arcade board, and they're releasing all of these games that were like slated for the arcades that just didn't quite get that release, or that were coming out for different systems, and it's really, really promising. So I want to make sure I go ahead and say that and throw that out there, because yeah, it could be like the indie kind of driver that we're looking for. And I don't actually know how indie it is, but I do know that there's a whole new arcade system out. They've got like four or five games out for it right now. And we are aware of it at Free Play, and we are keeping very, very careful eyes on it as it advances, because they're primarily shmups, fighters, and kind of your like metal sluggy platformers. So it's kind of like that next generation that's coming out, and we're pretty pumped about it. And I mean, there've been a lot of like proclamations made in the industry, like this will fix the arcade industry, this will save us. It's still about killer apps, right? It's like the same thing that drives those PlayStation sales. You've got to have those games that are amazing. It's kind of like Nintendo. You could like I was listening to something that was about like Nintendo and Sony and everything, and about how Sony was so upset because they had all the money. They had a popular console, but they couldn't kill Nintendo. And they were like, and Nintendo would like launch Nintendo 64 of like six games or some small number. And Sony would be like, why does everyone buy this? And then it was just like, we make the best games.
Yeah, quality.
As long as you have those, like, I mean, as long as you've got a great Mario and a great Zelda, how are you not going to buy this console? So that's the same thing that I would say for this EXA Arcadia. Really pumped about it. But yeah. Indie games, new arcade games, and if you're watching this, and you are into like kind of indie game development, or you're interested in porting your game to an arcade and you don't really know the next steps, feel free to shoot me an email, Corey@freeplayinc.com. I have a lot of really, really good contacts, and I also have a lot of good information, and I would love to help people. If you have a good game that can be translated to the arcade, I'd love to help you translate it. So we're here at Free Play Din. We're going to be chatting all day, doing some work on some games. I love this arcade. But
so what you're saying is we might have more indie games soon?
It could happen.
Love that.
And of course, one of the biggest problems is that lead time, right? Like, right. So think about it right now. If you're watching
soon,
this, no matter
whenever they build the cabinets.
Right, so right now, if you're watching this, no matter what day it is, it doesn't matter if it's like the actual day we recorded in March 2020, or you're watching this in like March 2022. I assure you, I have tens of thousands of dollars hung up on ordered indie games that we don't have yet.
Oh, that's true.
So that's definitely the most interesting thing about it. But we're out there to support them. And for now, I think that's wrapping it up. That's it for now. We will be back shortly after we play some Killer Queen.
Don't forget to like and subscribe.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.